On becoming US president, Joe Biden moved quickly to reverse Trump-era policies on climate action. In February 2021, the US returned to the International Paris Agreement on Climate Change, from which President Trump had withdrawn in 2017. This commits the country to taking action to mitigate global warming and reduce emissions. This about turn is indicative of the impact elections can have on climate action, both domestically and internationally, all the more important in an age of populist leaders and with the climate emergency becoming more urgent by the day. Emma Hurd, CEO of the Australia-based investor group on climate change, discusses the importance of US and Chinese action and what it means for Australia's response. She then outlines why elected leaders, along with business and finance communities, need to work hand in glove to drive climate action.
The position of the US is always really important in international climate politics, but the other really giant in the room, big giant in the room, is China. China's announcement that it's targeting net zero emissions by 2060 has huge implications for Australia in terms of our trade and regional security relationships as well. So, you know, for us, we tend to, in Australian politics, we tend to look to our allies and partners, and we look to our trade partners and our regional partners as the key influences in domestic politics. So our key historical allies, you know, perhaps the UK and the US, but our key trade partner allies are also China, South Korea and India and Indonesia. So if you look at what's going on in Asia, there's actually a really interesting shift, particularly post-COVID, where you're seeing a pivot going on in the region around more stepping up in terms of climate change response. So China is significant. That will move a lot of companies. We're already seeing it with companies like PetroChina, you know, making their own commitment to net zero. In South Korea, they've got very strong green recovery and also low carbon targets underway. India's got some strong targets underway. You know, so we're sort of seeing, and then we're sort of seeing it getting to the point where today more than 50% of Australia's largest trading relationships have got commitments in place to move to net zero by 2050 or sooner. There is no way that that will not influence Australia's response to climate change when all of our allies and trade partners are shifting in that direction. You know, it's interesting because maybe like 10, 15 years ago, it was clear that, you know, there was a perception, particularly coming from the business community, that it would be governments, it would be policy, and it would be regulatory requirements that would drive the response to climate change. And, you know, what we've seen to a great extent is that, you know, arguably, you know, modern politics is not really capable of driving on its own the huge whole of market sustained shift that we need to really avoid the worst of global warming. That actually every other segment of the community needed to be operating at that same level of ambition. Like you had to have the business community, the finance community, but all of us in the actual community operating at a similar level to do everything we could to reduce emissions and tackle climate change. So that kind of shift in terms of thinking, oh, government's going to set the policy and we'll just do what we need to, versus actually we need to be co-creators of the solutions from all of our perspectives, is a really interesting one. Because you've also seen that has influenced not just what governments do, but also how they go about implementing policy responses as well. But elections really do matter in terms of setting the signal, setting the direction, and setting the pace of change and the level of ambition in terms of what it is we are able to achieve within particularly the next 10 years. And from the Australian perspective, what we've seen is that the market and the community are playing their part, but unless you have that really strong and usually bipartisan or relatively bipartisan commitment to significant change, everything is harder and slower and more complicated than it needs to be or should be.
Nathaniel Keohane, Senior Vice President at US-based nonprofit The Environmental Defense Fund, highlights why US leadership on the climate emergency is important and what the Biden administration now needs to do in this area.
If you think about the periods of time over the past few decades when we've seen real progress on global climate action at a, you know, especially at a multilateral level, and those when we haven't. You know, one common thread has been a U.S. administration and a president in the White House who is willing to push strongly, not only domestically within the U.S. for greater climate action, but also to be a voice around the world. I think you saw, for example, President Obama getting personally involved in the lead up to the Paris Climate Agreement. I think his diplomacy was very important, of course, alongside the terrific work that the French did as presidents of the COP, all the work that your European nations did and that the High Ambition Coalition did, and so on. But that involvement of the US, I think, went back to early engagement of China, the G2 agreements in the lead up to Paris. And so I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that having having a pro-climate action White House will be a critical part of mobilizing greater ambition and reinvigorating multilateralism. I think the expectations on the Biden administration to have an ambitious and credible 2030 target, a 2030 nationally determined contribution or NDC, those expectations will be running very, very high. And the reason this is important is because the U.S., you know, as much as climate has been an issue, a lot of the policy discussion in the U.S. has been dominated by the domestic scene, the need for climate and energy to be a central part of an economic stimulus package or an economic investment, or how do you ensure that climate and energy investments are also advancing a more equitable and just world in light of everything we're seeing and the sort of deep systemic racism that we're seeing in the U.S. So that's been the focus of the U.S. conversation. But what you're going to have is a Biden administration that is going to have the rest of the world saying, okay, where's your 2030 target? And it had better be both ambitious and credible. And what they're going to find is that an ambitious target means, I think, at least 45 to 50% reduction below 2005 by 2030. That's going to, you know, I would say 50%, but, you know, 45 would be the sort of absolute minimum that I think people would say kind of passes muster for ambitious. But there's no way to make that credible without real concerted comprehensive policy in the US. You can't get there just through stimulus spending. You can't even get there just through Clean Air Act regulations. So that logic will mean if Biden administration is actually going to come forward with an ambitious and credible NDC, it needs to come forward with a more robust, as soon as it gets through the economic stimulus and investment packages that will be part of the first 100 days policy, the Biden administration needs to put forward a more ambitious, comprehensive policy that would need to pass Congress. And it needs to make it a priority in Congress, because it won't be able to meet the expectations of an ambitious and credible NDC without that.
James Shaw, New Zealand's Minister for Climate Change and the co-leader of the New Zealand Green Party, discusses the relationship between populist politics and climate inaction and how that might be countered.
The populist authoritarian leaders that you are seeing around the world have been enabled by the Trump presidency, you know, because that suited his style. And so he legitimized that approach in others as well. People kind of took their cues from that. So I think a change of leadership in the US will have a mitigating effect on that trend. But I worry that the kind of the cat is out of the bag on that. And given the pressures and the kind of economic chaos that you're going to see as a result of the COVID-19 pandemic, and the misfiring response in a lot of places, you know, means that, you know, there could very easily be the conditions for greater authoritarianism in some parts around the world than there are today. So, you know, that is a real concern to me, and you know, the effect that could have on climate policy is obviously significant. Even if people just sort of say, look, you know, we're seeing an increase in poverty. Development, we're seeing 30 years of development gains being lost, you know, because of COVID. You know, we just need to kind of park this climate stuff until we get the economy back on its feet. Those sort of trends, I think that you could see move. I think the counterbalance to that, however, will be where you have successful Green New Deal type programs running, the benefits of those will start to accrue to those countries. So you'll see that sort of investment start to get a return, and not just in terms of reducing emissions, but also increasing resilience, more inclusive economic participation, those kinds of things. And then I think that countries that adopt a more, you know, hunkered down, our country first authoritarian approach may start to go, well, you know, the way that we're doing it isn't working so well. Maybe we could try a little bit more of what those guys over there are doing.
Tom Burke, co-founder and chairman of climate change think tank E3G, considers the key role of Angela Merkel in the EU's climate response and the importance of alignment between the EU, China and the US on climate.
I think the other election that matters a lot will be who replaces Angela Merkel. She has been a really staunch champion of climate change, really for a very long time. I first met her at COP1 in Berlin. So, and she has been consistent in her application to the issue. And clearly she's the most influential leader in the EU. And in terms of moving global politics forward, the interaction in the EU, China, and the US matters a lot. We've seen with von Leyen in the Commission that the sort of, as it were, the 27 as a whole have got a very strong drive. But in a way, that's more institutional than political. And I think having Merkel there as the sort of prominent political leader has mattered. And I think so. That election is going to count for a lot. There's no doubt, if you want to maintain a global regime, then there has to be alignment between the EU, China, and the US, as the three big blocks representing most of the pollution, but also the source of the technology you need to decarbonize. So if they're all aligned, moving maybe at different paces, but essentially all moving in the same direction, with a shared narrative, then the rest of the world, in a sense, will find its own relationship to that center of gravity. Take away that center of gravity, and the internal tensions of 200 nations all trying to do the same thing, you know, just get harder to manage and so on. But I think it remains a central to the global solution to the problem.